thank you so much for listening to another episode of CX Chronicles Podcast. I'm your host, Adrian Brady Chisana. Tune in each week as we listen to amazing customer-focused business leaders from across the world sharing their personal stories about their teams, tools, process, and feedback. Check us out at cxchronicles.com today or listen on iTunes, Spotify, and Stitcher. Huge thanks for listening to another episode of the CX Chronicles podcast. We are here to make happiness a habit. You guys already know the problem. Globally, companies are losing over $75 billion per year due to poor customer experience and service. Over 90% of companies in the U.S. have a dedicated customer success and experience role. That means that millions of us are delivering customer-focused experiences every single day. Ask CXC how we can help your business. Number one, content. We have done a ton of work with podcasts, books, webinars, how-to guides, living playbooks, and more. Number two, our strategic partners. We are partnered with some of the world's leading technology, helping companies master their customer experience. And number three, our CXCS RevOps services. We help with team assessments, tech stack management, FAQ curation, customer-facing training and support, and feedback and customer listening as a service. Check out CX Chronicles today. All right, guys, thanks so much for listening to another episode of the CX Chronicles podcast. I am your host, Adrian Brady Chisana. Super excited for today's show, guys. We have an awesome guest. Mario Matulic is joining us. And guys, Mario has a pretty awesome background. And I'm not just saying that because I lean towards enjoying all the things that customer-focused business leaders are doing. But he is in a really unique spot, guys. He is building and leading an incredible company, customer management practice in New York City. And they are thinking about people like us every single solitary day. They're working with customer-focused business leaders. They're thinking about CX, CS, support, all the things that go into it. So, Mario, I'll pump, man. Why don't we dive right into the show? Take a couple minutes, man. Introduce yourself to the CX Nation and start today's show off like we start all these episodes, man. Like, I love the stepping stone question because it's important for people that are coming up behind us and climbing the ladder behind us to hear all the different walks of life, man, and all the different ways that people like you and I kind of get into some of the things that we're doing today.
Yeah, absolutely. First and foremost, thanks so much for having me, Adrian. It's a pleasure to you know, talk shop with you and kind of, you know, have an opportunity to be here and be with all of your great listeners. My background's, you know, an interesting one, maybe. You know, it's one of those kind of unique stories. We all, I feel like, land in this industry. Some pursue it, some sort of land here by happenstance. And you know, for me, it's been really good fortune. I started out like many people. I was an athlete. I played baseball, and I had the great fortune of having an opportunity to play at Oklahoma State University. And
that's awesome. Wait, Mario, what position did you play?
I was a catcher. So played at Oklahoma State University, and then had a chance to spend a few years in the minor leagues with the Cleveland Guardians organization. And I can tell you right now with certainty where I am today in my career, drawing back to where I was at 19, 20 years old playing baseball. Never in a million years would I have connected the dots, but, you know, looking back and reflecting on those years and then all the years in between, you know, when I say good fortune, there's so many lessons in those years, in terms of working with unique people, being introduced to many different cultures, getting a chance to travel the country to play with teammates from Japan, Australia, different parts of the United States, Latin America, and so on. And so I didn't know it at the time, but that opportunity gave me at a very young age an opportunity to really you know, have an introduction to what now is sort of my career and my livelihood in terms of being able to work with so many great CX professionals, both on the strategic and operations side of the house. So it's kind of an odd journey.
I love that, man. No, that's cool. Wait, I got to put you on the spot. What was your batting average senior year? What was your average batting average?
Honestly, another lifetime ago. You'll have to look it up. I don't even know. Listen, if I was that good, I'd be probably in the stadium right now, not talking to you.
I'm kidding. I love it, man.
Here I am. So it's been like I said, I try to connect dots on the two. What seems like two, you know, tale of two cities, tale of two halves.
Yeah.
It's tale of two careers.
Mary, first of all, I love it. You've gotten to know me. You've gotten to know the show. This is why I always use sports analogies, guys. Like, Mario, just now they're right out of the gates, which is like, there's sports can just teach you so much about not just the team aspect, but all the intricacies that go into every different sport, right? So there's playbooks in different sports. There's signals in baseball. There's different statistics that matter for catchers versus shortstops, right? Like, and so that's why, like, whether it's baseball or soccer or football, this is why I'm always using some of these analogies with business, because it is so freaking close. It's so similar. So I love that, man. Tell us a little bit about, even before CMP, what were some of the, once you left your baseball career, kind of what were you doing and where were you, and sort of like, how did you kind of even find the CMP opportunity in the first place?
Yeah, so it's you know, it's interesting. I come from pretty humble beginnings. I was the son of a New York City firefighter. You know, grew up in a small town on Long Island. And sort of, you know, one of the initial thoughts I'd had, I went to a school called Chaminade High School on Long Island. Was fortunate there as well. My mother was the smart one. She's like, I want you to go to this school. I didn't even know any better. We moved to a new town and she sent me to Chaminade, and that was a tremendous network. It ended up being a huge opportunity. You know, when I finished the baseball career, I was kind of drawing on my experience at Chaminade, thinking about what would be next. You know, what's the professional goal now? My parents were a little bit frustrated with me at the time, because they kind of invested in me to go to this school. And I said, well, I want to kind of be like my father. I want to become a New York City firefighter, and that's the path I'd like to take. And so I made a promise to my dad. I said, listen, I'm going to support you in doing it, but you got to do it differently than I did. I had to work three jobs. I had to, you know, make ends meet. I want you to study. I want you to become a chief of department. Like, go all the way. You know, we worked real hard to send you to Chaminade and supported you through the baseball career. We always knew that could end at any point, right? It can end at 18, it could end at 22, or it can end at 40 after a major league career.
Yep.
And, you know, we know that, but go ahead and give it your best effort. And so I took the fire department test, the whole thing, and I ended up getting involved with our parent company at the time. And I learned this space. And so I started at the ground floor. I was working with the attendees that attend our events. I was working with the solution providers that sponsor our events and obviously look to, you know, sort of display and demonstrate their capabilities to our practitioner attendees. And I really learned the entire market from the ground up, having had the opportunity to spend so much time with those people on the front lines, leading these teams, working with these teams, buying this different various types of technology. And I'd seen all the evolution from the outsourcing boom to the tech evolution to everything that came off the back of the pandemic and how the landscape changed there, various customer behaviors. So that kind of laid the groundwork initially. And that was the jumping off point. So I sort of fell in love with the space. The people are unbelievable. They're the leaders in this market, in this industry. They're relied on the most.
Yep.
They're asked to do the most. They have the highest level of pressure.
Absolutely.
So I really feel so many similarities to a sports life or an athletic life. And I didn't realize it. I didn't plan on it, but I kind of fell in love with it. And then when the fire department of New York called and said, okay, we're ready to hire you, I had to turn them down and say, I'm going to actually stick with this, because I fell in love with the career that much that it made me change course. And that was about 20 years ago now. So
that's awesome, man. For a couple of things. Number one, I appreciate you sharing that. Number two, I just think, like, for all of our listeners, Mario, it's like every single one of us comes from a different path. And one of the things that I've been really trying to highlight, like, for months now, is like these paths all kind of make us the different types of customer focused business leaders that we are. And the other piece is just like, I love that you shared like some of the family stuff, man, because like, there's only been a handful of guests that have really kind of talked about how either their parents or their family or their early upbringing, some of the expectations from the family, how that actually helped kind of carve a pathway that they knew it at the time or not. And I appreciate you calling that out, because none of us, come on, think about when every one of us, like, rewind back 10 years ago, 20 years, you know, none of us knew what we know today. And it's sure. Part of why there is a ton of truth and a little older, a little wiser. But I don't know, man, I appreciate you sharing that. I think that's awesome. And it sounds like you made the right decision. And I bet both your mom and your dad are very proud of the decision you made.
In general. I was pretty lucky to have them, though. Not everybody has kind of that opportunity. They were smart enough to put me in the right direction and guided me along the way. So without them, you know, from baseball to this, trust me, they did all the groundwork. They deserve a hell of a lot of credit. So
I'll tell you what, coming firsthand from a couple of my family members and several of my best friends were lucky enough to go even to Division I sports. Their parents are a huge part of why they're there. Cause I don't care what sport you play, man. It's 18 years of development before D1. It's literally like, that's where, you know, we had one awesome guest a couple months ago, Rick Elmore, founder of Simply Noted. And Rick was a University of Arizona football player, 4 years, and then he got drafted by Green Bay. So you and Rick are two of my few guests that understand sort of what that means. And for our listeners, people that don't care about sports, it's the same way as all of us taking a decade to hone our craft, or taking a decade to figure out what the hell we want to do, or taking a decade to build certain muscles to be able to go do certain things. So, but I love it. So Barry, I'd love to jump into the first pillar. Talk about the team at Customer Management Practice. Talk about the team at CMP. Give us some of the high levels around sort of how you guys have kind of built your team, some of the different roles that you have, and some of the different things that you're doing with your customers.
Yeah. You know, There's a couple ways I can answer this question. Firstly, again, I've had a lot of good fortune in my life. In this particular instance, when you ask me this question about the team, I had a chance to learn from so many great brands. That's kind of the amazing thing about the business we're in, is that, you know, I have the opportunity to work with so many great CX leaders, right? That whether they're on stage discussing and sharing some of their best practices, whether in the audience, and many of our events, that's who we're bringing together. So I get to sit there in the audience myself and learn from the best of the best. And so, you know, while I'll do that, I'll be able to take that back and figure out, okay, how should we structure CMP? What should we do to help, you know, create a culture that's going to engage people, provide them with the flexibility that they need to be successful, empower them in such a way. So we kind of designed this thing called the CMP way. And not dissimilar from what a lot of organizations do, to really have either core values or so on. But the idea behind this was to create a successful culture that was going to really put our team members first and really ensure that they were in a position to, again, have the flexibility they need to do the job, have a level of trust associated. You know, we give them the tools, the teaching, the guidance, the training, but then the level of trust. And then finally, the career development and the management infrastructure that they need to be supported in such a way to deliver and obviously, you know, achieve the outcomes that we all want to see. So when we think about that, those are the key drivers. It's the managers, it's career development, it's flexibility in today's operating environment. When we look at our research and we look at the frontline customer contact agents and the frontline managers, these are the things that drive engagement at a level and performance at a level that we know is far and above the average. And when you think about CMP, what we tried to do is create that sort of trust-driven environment. You know, we've hired you to do a job, you know, the old Steve Jobs mantra. You know, sometimes you don't always hire people to tell them what to do. Sometimes you hire really smart people to tell you what to do. And so when we look at that and we say, if we follow that properly, then you know what you find yourself with? You find yourself with a lot of people around you that add a heck of a lot of value to the business because you've unlocked their ability, that freedom within the framework to go ahead and turn loose on innovation, new ideas, best practices, efficiencies. And if you have a culture where it's an overly controlled culture or that framework is so narrow, there's not a lot of room to flex or move or you know, share your kind of ideas and concepts, I just think that really becomes a major inhibitor for growth for any organization. Yeah. So you see a lot of similarities on the front line of contact centers and CX operations, but we try to take a lot of those best practices and how we run CMP as well.
So first of all, I got a bunch of follow-ups on it. First of all, that's awesome. I tell people on a regular basis, and I was fortunate enough even before building CXC, but like, sometimes people are like, dude, how do you, like, you know, how have you been able to kind of get some of these experiences? So number one, working with a bunch of different companies, because think about it. Let's go back to our parents for a minute. My dad worked for the same company for 30 years. My mom worked for the same company for 25 years. Your parents, it sounds like they, and so like, that's fine. That's great. But when you have an opportunity to work for a bunch of different companies in a bunch of different industries, built a bunch of different ways with a bunch of different technology, dude, I tell people all the time and ask me, like, how'd you come up with some of the stuff with CXC? It's like, honestly, and then over the last 4 years, Mario, we worked with 100 companies with CXC. It expedites the velocity of your ability to, number one, have a multitude of paths or playbooks or possibilities that you can pull out. That's one thing. Number two, you just have an opportunity to rapidly see how a bunch of different companies are doing a bunch of different things. And it allows you to just kind of, I don't know, compartmentalize the good and the bad and the ugly. Like, here, you want to be good? These are the things. You want to be bad? Go ahead and do it that way. You want to be ugly? Go ahead and spend your money that way and make all those miscalculations and those misbets. And then, you know, just looking at CMP for a minute, guys, like, for our listeners that don't know, Mario's team, customer management practice works with some huge companies, right? You guys have globally recognized brands you're working with, right? So like MasterCard, Uber, Yahoo, United, Bose, all these Valvoline, huge companies that literally drive the world, right? Dick's. Though learning from those companies and seeing how they're doing things at that scale, at that volume, that's a game changer. That probably makes it a lot easier to go into a new client and start parsing things out right away, or start finding immediate areas ripe for opportunity, ripe for optimization.
Yeah, today's environment as well. You know, since the pandemic, you know, I was just talking with a peer in my network. We kind of spoken a while. We ended up, you know, getting some time on the calendar and catching up. And this person had been at Extended Stay America for better part of 10 years. And we'd worked together on a few events over the years. And so we were just catching up and we're talking about the impact of the pandemic and how the operating environment, you know, it's 4 years ago. I was just, you know, today is what, March 20th. So
yeah.
I was over the weekend, St. Patrick's Day, I was reminded that was the fourth anniversary of 14 days to slow the spread. And we think about how the, you know, that's 4 years later now. But what I always say to all of our peers in our network, those that are attending our events and so on, is it doesn't matter if you've been doing this for decades. Nobody has more than 4 years of experience, because that pandemic coming along changed so many things about customer behavior. It changed so many things about our the future of work. The future of work is now, right? This is what we're working towards before pandemic. Pandemic just accelerated it.
Yep.
And so when we think about how, to your point, how you're able to benchmark and learn from so many different brands, that was a lot more accessible. We just got together more, right? And now everything's gotten a little bit busier. Everything's gotten a little bit more high in demand. We're a little bit more diligent about how we spend our time and where we spend our time. So when we bring people together, those benchmarking opportunities are not as abundant as they were. So one of the things that we try to bring to this entire community is the ability to do what you just mentioned. Yeah, I'm sharing how I learned from the likes of Dick's Sporting Goods and MasterCard and Hilton and all these great brands that I'm blessed to work with on a consistent basis. But how do the folks over at United Healthcare have the opportunity to compare and contrast against best practices to say what Bank of America is doing?
Yeah.
It's not as easily available as it once was. So to be able to get together and take a few days away from the busyness of your workflow that is in this post-pandemic environment and give people an opportunity to learn from one another in a more constructive way to team build, that's really a role we try to play in this space and specifically in this community. But yeah, it's such value in it. It does expedite your learning at such a rapid rate, to your point. There's no real replacement for that when you have that ability to be in the room with so many great leaders at once and learn from them all.
Yep. You just nailed it, man. And I just call out the point for our listeners. If you haven't already accepted this, what Mario just said is spot on. Like, work as we know it is different. So like somebody posted something the other day on LinkedIn, Mary. I'm not going to say I remember who it was, but it was something along the lines of similar to what you just said about that line in the sand of when COVID started to change the whole freaking world. And every one of us had to just accept this new way. Some of us didn't, many of us did. But it talked about how work experience for everybody, even some of our gray haired friends and leaders who are, you know, 40 years experience. I'm not discrediting your 40 years. I get it. I promise you, every year that I age, I understand the value of age and wisdom, but every one of us started from scratch on that day with this new world. So I love that you called that out, because as CX leaders, guys, this is where it's a massive opportunity for us. And then the other thing too, and we'll jump into tools in a second, but like, this is why so many customer-focused business leaders are also going to have to be forced, whether they even recognize it yet today, to also be employee experience leaders at the same time. Because you're to get that incredible customer experience, you've got to have an employee team that is well-equipped, well-supported, prepared for battle, for lack of a better term. And then you're playing in this new world of hybrid. Sometimes we're in New York City. Sometimes we're remote. You got to be able to bang out an incredible presentation to Dick's executive leadership team remote versus in person. So like every one of us has been forced to kind of sharpen our skills, and going back to baseball, we're doing offensive drills, we're doing defensive drills. You got to do all of it now to be ready to rock and roll, you know?
It's a perfect segue into tools and even process, Adrian. So when you think about what the pandemic has done, and you know, let's take contact centers for example, and there's a perfect storm here. It's a combination of how work's changed. It's a combination of how customer behaviors have changed. And we had generational customers that lived in certain channels that were forced to move into other channels. So we had no choice, right? At that point in time, and that inflection point in our history. It hit every industry. Every industry had challenges. We were just, again, same colleague I referenced earlier. We were talking about it was a horrible period. I mean, we can go on for days about how difficult it was on so many levels. But if you try to find some silver lining, it was that as leaders, we were challenged in such a way to have to pivot, to have to change behaviors, to accelerate some really positive things.
Yep.
So again, while you can't really ever speak about that pandemic in a positive light, try to find some silver lining is how we became better leaders, stronger leaders, how we learned new ways of working that would potentially carry us decades into the future. But that also changed the game in so many levels for so many industries. And I believe that customer experience, customer care, customer service was really at the eye of that storm. And when we talk about tools, we talk about process. Competency frameworks had to change, right? You now had to, you weren't in a contact center with 1,000 seats, managers and supervisors over the shoulders of every individual. You know, our statistics tell us that we had roughly 20 to 25% of contact centers were in any form of remote or hybrid pre March 2020. Now that number is around 80% hybrid or remote, with only 20% on premise, right?
Yep.
Tools, the technology you need. Certainly is the first place most people go, and it's the obvious place. But what gets overlooked, and I don't mean to go back to team, is what's required of who you hire, what is your frontline agent persona and competency mix look like today versus yesterday? What does your frontline manager need to look like today versus pre-pandemic? And the frameworks needed to drive performance now, I can tell you right now, if you're using the same playbook you used back in 2019 or early 2020, you're missing a beat, because that playbook has changed dramatically in how you hire, how you train, who you're putting into the seat, the type of competencies you're looking for to drive top performance and engage your workforce. It's very, very different. So, again, not to belabor the first pillar, but
really
interesting how that all came full circle and the inflection point it served for this space.
I am going to literally continue to iterate this fact, but of all the four pillars and of all the incredible folks that we've been able to meet over these last 4 or 5 years with CXC, tools is the big one. I know that but here's what most people respond. Most people say, well, then of the most important, it's team, because team dictates the other pillars. And that's totally true. But what I've learned as I've had more and more and more of these conversations, tools is the biggest problem that most CX, sales, revenue operations leaders actually struggle with, because we have a software problem globally. There is a new piece of software every freaking day of the week that comes to market. That's great. I'm not hating on software. I keep saying this. I love software just as much as the next guy or gal. But the world's about to be spending $750 billion. Most companies, especially SMBs, they see maybe sub 20% utilization rates of said software. Great companies, mid-market enterprise companies, use use their tech stack to with maybe a 30% utilization rate. That's horrible. There's no other industry in the world that we are okay with that type of waste. And then the other part too is, I think a lot of executive leaders that are good at staying out of the weeds, right? They're all about selling. They're all about customers, all about finance, keep money in the bank, because that's every great CEO's job. But because they're letting their leaders do their thing, and you just mentioned this earlier, let smart people do the hard things, and then they can come back to you with things that they need your help on or direction with. But I think that they think when they buy the Salesforce, or they buy the Zendesk, or they buy the HubSpot, or they buy the Intercom, or the Freshworks, whatever the hell, they think that they've done the job. And what we all the folks that are actually taking the time to listen to this conversation right now, literally the war has just started. Okay, great. You just got a CRM? Perfect. The war just started. You just got a ticketing system? Perfect. The war just started. And across the tech stack, each different battles, different points of the year. They require different SMEs and different solutions. And, you know, this is why tools is such a tricky one, man. This is why so many leaders, I think, especially in the CX/CS space, this is where they spend a lot of their time, or this is where the money or the misspend of money or the misource of resources really derives from. Every one of us has worked at a company where there's 20 plus pieces of tool in the tech stack. We use two of them. That means theoretically, if we omitted three quarters of the 20, we could save $1 million a year. And now tell me why you can't hire that extra person or do that additional training or go to those additional events if you have that $1 million back in your bank account each year, right? Things like that.
Well, you hit the nail on the head on where there's potentially some pitfalls around is they make the tech purchase based on either A, leading with saving money and the financial business case associated with it. I'm not saying we shouldn't look at the financial business case long term. It absolutely needs to be there.
Absolutely, yes.
But if that's the only reason you're doing it, more than likely it's going to miss a mark somewhere with your people, whether it be your customers or your employees. And in the end, that's going to cost you. That's going to cost you dearly, because you'll find that when you make the decision to invest in technology and you find that that it was led by a financial only business case, well, the costs that are associated with lost market share, customers departing, or internally attrition or disengagement from your frontline staff, those numbers will far exceed any savings that you've been able to derive from a tech investment. So what we often tell many of our leaders is, okay, what is the outcome you're looking for, and how does it align with the customer expectation first and foremost? And more times than not, these decisions are made in a boardroom without the customer expectation fully understood.
Yep.
And when we roll these things out, usually they then come along with, okay, now that we've got this piece of technology in place, we've rolled it out, we bought it, it's live. How much staff are we cutting? How many people are we cutting, and where are we cutting? Right. Cause the finance people come out and they're like, okay, well, we've invested in this. Now we're supposed to reduce by 20%. And inevitably, if it's misaligned, if any investment in technology is misaligned with customer expectation, those people that are utilizing that technology, whether internal or external facing, will give it one shot, and it'll immediately return back to whatever processes they've had in place, whether it be returning to a live support channel if they're a customer, let's say, or an internal employee becoming so frustrated that it didn't help them become more efficient in their day-to-day work, that then they end up leaving or start looking.
Yeah.
And those are when those costs compile, because now you don't go back to the old channel. If you're a customer and you went to a self-service interaction, let's say due to some real strong investment by a brand in a self-service interaction, given some tech investment, and that goes poorly in the first instance, where do you go next? You immediately come back to that live support channel, as an example, that you were very comfortable with for all the years that you're loyal to that given brand.
Yep.
Except you're not returning to the same old live support channel. I'm a kind of a sci-fi geek, so I always like the Back to the Future movies. I compare it to, like, when Marty McFly went back to the old 1985, but he thought, but it actually was a different old 1985. That's the live support channel you go back to, because it's 20% fewer agents. There's less workforces, less resources. Now you got long wait times. Yep. You got disgruntled frontline agents handling your call that are at the end of their rope. And it's just a different experience.
Yep.
And it's because so many brands rushed to try to claim those financial savings without ensuring that they delivered an exceptional customer experience first.
Yeah.
For realizing those financial gains.
Hearing you say that, Mario, it makes me immediately think too, people that roll their eyes at customer journey mapping, they've never done it properly. They've never had someone come in and facilitate in a way of where exactly what you just said, you start tying not just employee consternation points, customer consternation points, all the touch points, but then financial metrics or financial KPIs that you already know are really, really critical, whether it's top of funnel or top of journey, beginning of journey or end of journey or in the middle, right? Dude, that's an easy way to right there see what potential ROI yields look like for being able to have certain tools. Maybe you don't need certain tools. The other thing makes me just think about is knowing where you get the biggest bang for your buck on ROI, so that you're not skimping in whether it's people or technology resources. Know where your high milestone moments are in a customer journey. For CXC, all the work that we do with our clients, we really push our clients' teams to think about milestone moments, right? Because, okay, we get it. Journey maps can get complex. They can be robust. They can be verbose. There could be too much shit going on. I get it. But know your milestone moment in awareness and consideration and conversion, and know you better know your milestone moments in onboarding. Because think about what Mario just said, guys. You have like one shot. If you're a software company, if you're building a SaaS team right now, or you're leading a SaaS team, you got one shot. If you're not knocking it out of the damn park with your onboarding, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if you're around in a couple of years. And then when you get to customer success, it's again, like whether you're a software company, whether you're a service company, whether you got a product, the success part is just constantly reminding your users and your customers all of the value that provide outside of the service, outside of the product, outside too, guys. This is why there's so many different ways that you need to be going to battle with your customers these days, and reminding them why you're there, reminding them how you can help them, reminding them how you're providing value, whether they realize it or not. And it's just like anything in life, man, you got to hear it 100 times before you take action usually. Or some of us are smarter than others, but like most people need to hear these things again and again and again before they know where to use it. Mary, this is fantastic. I want to make sure that we hit a little bit of feedback, man, because I was excited because you work with these incredible companies. And like I said earlier in the show, man, you've seen, I bet you your team at CNP has seen some feedback data that many of us have never even seen that type of volume before, right? Because a lot of our listeners are going to be founders. They're leading CX and CS in venture groups or venture backed companies, and they're emerging mid market CX and CS leaders. But some of the logos that you guys are working with, I'd love for you to spend a couple of minutes talking about sort of what you've learned and what your team kind of thinks about when it comes to ways of really kind of sinking your teeth into how you get really good at managing and leveraging and using your customer experience or your customer feedback. And then definitely a couple of ideas or maybe a story in terms of how you've seen companies do a really great job of leveraging and acting upon employee of feedback.
Yeah. So when it comes to feedback, one of the biggest challenges we have is we often see that we make feedback so challenging at times. It's a high effort activity, right? So firstly, one thing I'll say is sort of maybe something to underscore how you're thinking about feedback is make it easy on your customers to provide you feedback. This has been an issue for a lot of days where we make it so high effort, right? And even some of the best brands, I'm talking about brands that are just known for CX, there's still, when it comes to the feedback piece, it's an extra step. It's an extra effort by the customer. Yeah. Remember, customers want personalization. They want ease. These are the things that drive their loyalty. It drives their lifetime value. And we follow all these rules. Some of the brands that we work with follow all these rules up to feedback and then make feedback really, really high effort, right? So one just sort of underscoring moment, we'll always say to any organization, make feedback easy. Make it something your customers want to give you and provide you, and make sure that you're gathering it in a way that's really low effort for them. Because let's be honest, it's for you, and you are going to give that back to your customers in the form of improvements and adjustments to make the experience even better. But if you want to get the best possible feedback, make it really easy for them. But in terms of feedback we get, we gather all the time, it's around, it comes back down to what is going to help a brand improve in comparison to their peers, right? So feedback is all relative. And you know, we often talk about, we call it internally the Amazon rule. You've probably heard a million times over, where customers today are evaluating their most, you know, their current experience with you against the last great experience, right?
Every SMB owner in the world can thank Mr. Bezos for creating that level of expectation for modern consumers.
Listen, this is their marketing arm, right? He's built so many customers that have fell in love with the ease in which their brand delivers. And we all find it so simple to work with Amazon that we all do, and we all tell our friends about it. Now, who doesn't work with Amazon, right? But in the early days, that's how they grew their brand. There was no more. It's a brilliant marketing strategy, and what so many brands struggle with, and unfortunately, where the levers pull is, well, hey, if we're able to overcome these issues and make it that easy for our customers to work with us and create the right level of personalization in those interactions, our customers are going to come back. They're going to tell their friends. They're going to tell their family. They're going to boast about us. They're going to be our best marketing effort that we can ever come up with or drum up at any marketing strategy meeting. But we so often race to the bottom in terms of budgets, constraints, when we think about how do we improve upon our customer experience. So that's first and foremost. So often I see organizations gain the feedback and get access to it, but then struggle to make the case internally on how to actually drive real change.
Absolutely.
The organization.
Absolutely. It happens time and time again. And I think what I've learned in my near 20 years of doing this work now is like every You need to know how to tell the story to your specific executive leadership team. Every executive leadership team is different. Every executive leadership team has different goals. Every executive leadership team has different appetites for what they care about and what they frankly just don't care about at all. And then the last thing is, guy, and I know that we get into this a lot, and I'm really glad you brought this up, Mario, but like, if you're not creating very clear ROI sets on some of the CX and CS initiatives, CTAs, objectives, investments that you want to make, if you're not making crystal clear ROI positions to your executive leadership team, they're not going to listen to you. They're not going to take it serious. You will continue to have budget taken away from you. And one of the reasons, guys, why you always hear me saying with CXC and in general, why I personally just believe that customer experience, customer success done well is modern selling, is because for like the last 5 to 10 years, man, I've done nothing but think about how CX and CS, if done right, leads directly to the bottom line, leads directly to your ability to retain customers, leads directly to your ability to increase lifetime value, identify upsell opportunities, cross-sell opportunities, customer success qualified leads. Dude, there is so many companies I talk to every week that are doing tens of millions of years and they do not know what a CSQL is. And I'm like, I'm sorry, how much are you paying your CMO right now? $300,000, $400,000? Yeah. How does he or she not know what a CSQL is? And how is he or she not paying way more attention to maybe the 10 CSQLs a month that you get over the bullshit 1,000, marketing qualified leads that come in to give to your sales team? And so like, I think people are starting to get it. I think not in every industry, some businesses don't have to worry about it. We both know that, but like for our folks listening right now, they're building stuff and you're trying to like edge out on market. You're trying to quickly get to the top and, you know, disrupt the space. These are some of the things that like you got to build into your ground game. If you don't, it's going to be difficult for you to kind of get things across the finish line.
Completely agree.
Mary, this has been fantastic, man. Before I let you get off this feedback and then we'll get ready to close up today's show, but one, maybe 60 seconds or 2 minutes on different ideas around employee feedback or things that you've seen with some of these big brands and some of these awesome clients you guys are working with that they're doing really well on the EX side of the game.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I'll give a real world story. It's a healthcare company, sizable healthcare company. You'd recognize the brand name almost immediately, but they were looking at a particular attrition problem that they had, and actually seen it decline from its peak number. And it was interesting where when we nailed down and found the real data point where attrition was happening to the greatest extent, it was actually not with their 0 to 6 month tenure people, it was with their 6 to 12 month. And then actually for 12 month onward, they were doing great. And the leadership team that was working with us with CMP Research at the moment, they were saying, you know, I'm so frustrated. We've done so much. We're paying at a higher level than we've ever paid. We were so below market value. Now we're exceeding market, sort of fair market value.
Yep.
We've created career development plans for everyone. And when we got down to it, what we found was that the majority of the career development communication happened in the onboarding phase. In the first 2 weeks they joined the company, when everything in the kitchen sink was being thrown at them. And so actually in the first 6 months, a lot of those people achieved their first tier of development, right? And they moved on to that next bump and they got the extra pay raise and the title and the responsibility. And that was great. But they didn't remember anything that was talked about beyond the 6 month mark. And it's something so simple as just your communication to this tier of person, 6 to 12 months, where most of your attrition's happening, just wasn't clear. And if you're able to create some success stories and communicate to them in such a way that's clear and they understand, hey, this is what you're going for in 6 months, and then say like in the fourth or fifth month, you're on the verge of this next promotion. Let's talk about what we need to do for your 12 month. And again, that goes back to managers, flexibility, career development being the three top drivers for engagement and retention within the workforce that are customer facing CX operations people today. And this healthcare company was a great example of when we think about it, if the manager wasn't communicating appropriately, and we actually knew there were a couple of key managers within the full 200 person operation. And there was a couple of key managers that were really failing on this. And that's when the majority of the attrition was happening. And then we also found that when we took it a step further, that there was actually just a lack of clarity on some of the key success stories. So those people that went on and took advantage of that full career development journey and how great they were doing and where they were able to not only go within the contact center organization, but then where they were able to go into the greater organization as a jumping off point.
Yep.
None of that was being communicated. So you just find it so often, you know, managers, flexibility and career development being the top three drivers for engagement and retention within today's customer-facing workforce. Now, when you think about those managers and you think about the skill set associated with those managers to be able to do some of the things I just referenced, that's where some of this falls off. And it's why it's such an important component to look at from a different lens in today's operating environment, based on how you did it for so many decades previously. Because if you can nail that, you talk about financial business cases. Well, when you're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars in attrition and it comes down to three quarters of that sitting with your 6 to 12 month tenured employees, and it's something so simple as clearer communication and demonstration of key success stories around your career development plan that you worked so hard to build in the first place. These are some of the things. So when you think about employee experience, you think about what's going to retain and engage your team members. I think it's looked at as a really big and robust and complex topic. And yeah. Sometimes when you boil it down and you look at the data, it's really straightforward and simple.
Yeah.
It doesn't take a whole lot of extensive skill set to be able to do some of the things I'm talking about. It's just a matter of knowing, having the data, being able to then act on the data.
I love it, man. And you know what it makes me think about? Like two things. Number you, what everything you just walked through right there, this is why a company like Korn Ferry has got, you know, almost a nearly $3.5 billion market cap, period. Number two, what you made me think about, for some of our listeners that aren't at that level yet, you're not climbing towards a public position yet, take some time to build out or draw out an employee journey map. Because for some of our friends that are building like growth focused companies, and you keep losing CSMs, or you said it earlier, Mario, because me and you both know the same thing in our industry. Support reps are hard right now, man. So if you have a shitty customer experience bill and your CSMs or your support reps just get fucking hammered every day, then you might want to think about drawing out an employee journey map, because there's probably a few instances where just a little bit of additional training, a little bit of additional support, and maybe, because most of us enjoy this, a little extra money in the right places can go a whole long way. And so, like, I love some of those thoughts. Mario, this has been fantastic, brother. I'm so excited that you were able to come on the show. Before I let you go, anything that you want to call out, anything that's coming up with CMP, anything that's going on that you want the CX Nation to know about? And then most importantly, where can people find out more about you, sir, and connect with you? And where can people find out more about your team at CMP?
Yeah, absolutely. So so I'll shout out our flagship event coming up, Customer Contact Week, CCW Las Vegas, June 3rd through 6th at Caesars Forum in Las Vegas, Nevada. It's the world's largest customer contact event. So if you're a CX operations leader, a customer contact, customer care leader, whether your team is 10 people or you're overseeing 5,000 person operation, we'd love to see you there. We have everyone from supervisors, managers, up to EVPs, SVPs, customer care, COOs. So we'd love to see you out in Vegas in June. You can follow CMP customermanagementpractice.com. You can follow me on LinkedIn as well. I'm always kind of, you know, sharing and publishing as much and as often as I can. And you'll see a lot from our team. And then, of course, anything I discussed today from a CMP research standpoint, feel free to go to cmpresearch.com and take a look at some of the research that we're offering. A number of our clients really leverage a lot of that research to make better decisions in, you know, what's really an unprecedented environment. So when I say, you know, you only have 4 years of experience, a lot of executive leaders agree, and they leverage the data that we can obviously glean from our larger universe to be able to make better decisions, benchmark effectively, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, Adrian, thanks so much for having me on the podcast. I really do appreciate it. It's been a pleasure, and hopefully some of this was thought provoking for your listeners.
It was fantastic, brother, and I'm pumped to be able to join you guys out in Las Vegas in June.
Absolutely, yeah.
CX Chronicles, Mario and his team invited us guys to be able to have some awesome conversations with some awesome customer focused business leaders. So we're super thrilled to be there. And then you and I, my friend, are going to have to pick a night where we maybe go hit the tables and win some money out in Vegas. But Mario, it's been a pleasure, brother.
It doesn't take a lot. Trust me. The CCW community likes to have fun out there in Vegas. So
this is what I figured. We're going to enjoy ourselves there. And guys, I'll make sure in the show notes, I drop information, Mario, on CCW, because we're going to be pumped to have as many of you guys join the fun as possible. But Mario, thank you so much for joining. A huge thank you for sharing your story with us, and I look forward to talking with you real soon, my friend.
Pleasure. Thanks, Adrian.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the CX Chronicles podcast. We're thrilled to have you as a part of the CX Nation, tuning into customer-focused business leaders from across the world. Be sure to check out the CXC website, and as always, find us on any of your favorite podcast players: iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and more. Thanks so much for making this show a reality, and being a part of the CX Nation. And as always, folks, remember to make happiness a habit.